everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Patty, how are you?
I'm doing just fine today. How are you doing?
Tired, but on this side of the dirt.
Amen.
We'd like to thank everyone who is a subscriber and or guest with us this time. Whether you're watching on video or listening through audio, we appreciate your listenership, viewership. If you are watching on some platform that allows you to click the subscribe button that's down below, please do that if you haven't already. Click the like. That lets the metric know that you appreciate us. So besides that, oh yeah, almost forgot. The link tree, which has all our links to our, yeah, I'm sorry. My mind's going a million different places today. So we have the link tree that has the links to our Facebook groups and our email address. And if you watched us before the last episode, that was the Q&A, which was like, yay, that finally happened. That came to us through an email from a listener. So we are very pleased about that. So it's still there. So if you want to ask more questions, we can do a Q&A number two sometime down the road, maybe. Although I don't know how many more questions there could be. We seem to cover a lot of topics. So, but that's about it. So, Patty, what's tonight's topic?
Well, I named it White Dog. I actually was doing a lot of history and reading and stuff on the different types of dogs. We're all familiar with the black dog stories, and we'll touch on some of those throughout. But I did not know that there were two other types of dog stories. One is called the white dogs, and then there's blue dogs, and then there's the black dogs. So I started out to do white dog stories, but along the way, I just decided to do stories of dogs. Ghost stories, demonic stories, a little bit of everything. But let's get into it. So one of the stories that when I was researching for Haunted North Carolina, I came across this story, and I didn't tell it, I don't believe, there. But I remember reading it and finding it fascinating. So I want to tell you the story of the ghost of the white dog of Goshen Hill. So Goshen Hills is an area in North Carolina, and this story dates back to the early mid 1800s. It's not a well-defined story, but it continues to become a part of the folklore of this region. And there was a salesman going through the area. He was a nice man, a friendly man, had a nice grin, and he had a joke for everybody. You know, he's very personable, and with him was his dog, who was this big old white dog that rode along in the wagon. It was his best friend, his companion, and frankly, his guardian as well. The dog served many purposes, but that he was loved was never in question. The man doted on this dog. So they make their way, you know, through the area, stopping at isolated houses and in towns and pitching their wares wherever they go, trying to make a living. So while they're in this area, there's a murder that takes place. And it was in an area where the salesman and the white dog had been at approximately the time the murder occurred. So, of course, the local people immediately started the gossip mongering. You know, nothing like this ever happened before. It's that salesman with that big white dog that's been running around here lately. He must have been the one. And you can imagine how everybody got you know, all wrought up and riled up, and they wanted to get some justice, if you will, for the murdered victim. And so they got together a mob, and they attacked the man as he's got his little wagon outside of town, and he's settled in for the evening. I can't imagine the fear of this poor man as he sees these people coming at him, and he's confused. He has no clue. He may not even have heard about the murder at that point. And the dog gets up and starts its hackles. I'm sure it could sense what was going on. But the mob came closer, and it chased the salesman. He broke away from the wagon and took off running. And the dog ran with him. They caught the man, and they hung him up beside the road. The dog attacked. It howled. It barked. It roared. It carried on. It bit people. And the man kept screaming. He finally got the idea that he was being hung for this murder. And he kept screaming, "I'm innocent. I didn't do anything," until they silenced him. One of the guys in the mob had a gun. And he pulled the gun and he shot the white dog. He wounded it, and the dog finally crawled away whimpering. Well, everybody went back to town after that fear and anger was burned off. they were very quiet about what had occurred outside of town, and they left the body hanging. Nobody went out to get the body down, and within a day or two, they found out that this wasn't the man who committed the murder. The right man was caught, and the corpse still hung there in the tree on this road called the Old Buncombe Road, and nobody would come near it. Nobody would take the corpse down. Nobody saw the dog again either, and they assumed that it had crawled off somewhere and died. But there were people who came through the area who said that they saw flashes of this white dog moving around, and they weren't convinced that it was dead. It would sit near the corpse and growl at people, but nobody would see it when they were in groups. It was only a singular person at a time. And so as the months went by and the body decomposed as it would, the dog disappeared. A few months went by, and a man was walking down the Old Buncombe Road, and it was getting dusk. And as he came to the area where the hanging had happened, out of nowhere, he caught this flash of white. He heard the snarl and the growl, and this dog came flying out of nowhere, and it attacked him. And within seconds, it had literally ripped him to pieces. The dog almost tore him apart. He fought it, and he managed to get away, the dog chasing after him. He was found. They brought him to town, and he told this crazy story about the old peddler's white dog attacking him. Well, people began to look for the dog again, and over the course of time, this dog would attack every person who was in the mob, singularly, when they were least expecting it. Every one of them were damaged. The first fella, his hand was nearly torn off. Another, his leg was damaged. They never found the ghost of the white dog. They never found the body of the white dog. But people to this day claim they see the white dog sitting in a certain spot as if still waiting for his master to return. But sometimes, he'll take after someone. He may hurt him, he may not. They say he even chases cars, as though he's still looking for something or someone, but he's been seen many times throughout the years. So I thought that was a really interesting story. To a little less tragic story, if you will, let's go to Nashville, Tennessee. So in Nashville, Tennessee, there's an area called the Belmont Hillsboro neighborhood. And there is a legend there that there is a boxer dog, that haunts this little neighborhood. The story goes that this dog was a friendly dog. It was known throughout the area. And it loved to walk along with the kids when they were doing trick-or-treat on Halloween. And one night, the dog was trotting along with the kids. Everybody knew the dog locally. Nobody was afraid of it. And the dog's name was Preston. And Preston saw a little boy out in the road and a car coming around the turn, and the dog realized that if that little boy didn't get out of the way, that car was going to hit him. Preston dashed out into the road, knocked the boy out of the way, and got hit and killed himself. That was 50 years ago, or a little more. Now they say every Halloween, children from the area report being bumped on the sidewalk, and when they step anytime they step into the road while they're trick-or-treating, or if they seem to be going too slowly from house to house. There is an old woman in the area who claims that as a child, she had bumped into Preston. In fact, she knew him personally. And every year at trick-or-treat, she leaves little dog biscuits out for him. And she claims they're always missing long about the time the trick-or-treaters go by. Now, is it true that the ghost of Preston comes and takes them? I don't know. But what I do know is the people really believe in Preston and that he's still there guarding the children for trick-or-treat.
Nice story.
It is a nice story.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that Preston met his end, but, you know, that's still, you know, a nice story.
It is a nice story. He's a guardian dog. Now, one of the very oldest ghost stories to ever be in America that we know of that was written down somewhere is a story from a place called Port Tobacco, Maryland. And this is a Blue Dog story. This story dates way back into the early 1700s. So the story is about a guy by the name of Charles Howard Sims. Now, Sims, he wasn't a very nice fella. In fact, he was a lot less than a nice fella. He was a bit of a drunkard, and one night after he was drinking and fighting in the bars, he got mugged. He had been bragging about how much gold he had on him at the time, and of course, somebody decided it was a good night to take the money from him. So he went down swinging, and along with Sims was this old blue tick hound that he had with him that always accompanied him everywhere he went. So as this fella and Charles Howard Sims were wrestling to the ground, the dog tried to attack and fight off the intruder who was attacking his master. Unfortunately, the dog didn't survive. He was stabbed. The robbers buried the gold because they were afraid that if they had the gold on their person, they would get, you know, convicted of the crime because they'd be the only ones that knew where the gold was at. So they thought they'd leave it lay for a while. But the story says that when they went back to collect that gold, they were attacked by a large blue tick hound. To that day, they say that this dog guards its master's gold. There's a restaurant and a bar in the area that's called the Blue Dog in memory of this dog. Every so often, somebody claims they see this dog just sitting there. Now, this is an interesting story because for me, most people don't realize it, but there are, we're going to talk a little bit more about them later, but there are dogs stories all throughout Pennsylvania history and all throughout German history in particular, that dogs will lead you to or guard treasures. They're known to guard cemeteries and other places as well, but these guards are called guardian dogs. And their task is to see that only the righteous takes whatever their treasure is that they're guarding. So it sounds almost like he was one of the first stories in America of a guardian dog. So in Scotland, and again, the Appalachian Mountains are filled with German and Scottish and Scotch-Irish people who came here for a better life. So you will bump into these stories quite frequently. One of the most common ones is that there'll be a black dog, size of a calf, with shaggy black coat and sometimes with fiery red eyes. They wander solitarily through a cemetery. They were supposedly killed and buried in the cemetery when the cemetery was first created to be a protector of the dead, to keep the dead from being dug up. Again, something that would be very possible in the days whenever there were corpse collectors who sold bodies to medical schools. People don't realize it, but that's the reason that they had the cages over the caskets. If you go to a lot of old cemeteries, you'll see that there's cages over caskets and stuff like that, and grave sites. And it was because there were people who were stealing the bodies of the dead and selling them to medical schools. Medical schools had no way to get bodies, so they would pay these people to go out and steal. It was a lucrative business if you were able to stomach the job of digging up the dead, the recently dead, and selling them to the medical schools for anatomy lessons.
Oh, you told a story once. Was it a cemetery near, was it Bloomsburg?
I believe so. Yeah.
That had the iron works over the iron cages over the graves.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons they did that, was because they were afraid that their family members' bodies would be stolen. There's a story, it's a history story, not a ghost story, but down in Philadelphia about a young boy, about 12 years old, who was sent to an ice house near his home, and you know the ice houses of the time would have been ice blocks with sawdust between them to keep them from melting together. And you would go in and you would chip out a little bit of ice. And so he was sent in there by his family to chip out some ice. And people would store stuff in them during the summer months, like milk and what have you as well, because they were a cold place. And then you would go fetch your you know, your canister of milk and take it over to the house, use what you needed and put it back in the cold storage. So if you have a problem putting stuff in the fridge, think about having to run a block and a half to the ice house to get your milk for breakfast and take it back. Well, anyhow, in this true story, he's in there and he's chipping off the ice and, you know, he's a kid, so he starts poking around. His mother had died a week earlier, and to his horror, he finds her body tucked away in the back of the ice house. Somebody had dug her up, and he let out a heck of a wail, and the police came and they found who did it and arrested him.
Wow.
Yeah, the guy stored it there until he could sell it that night. So, you know, these stories are fairly common in the 17 and early 1800s. In Los Angeles, there's a pet cemetery. It was called the Pet Cemetery to the Stars. This cemetery has about a 10-acre memorial park, and it's called Calabasas. And in this, there's lots of famous and lots of very rich people's pets, dogs, cats, you know, rabbits, you name it, they're buried there, including the dog, one of the dogs from the Little Rascals movies, Hopalong Cassidy's horse, Topper, and one dog, a little dog named Kabar, who was Rudolph Valentino's dog. Now, he's just a little, little tiny dog. He's a little lap dog. Now, this dog was basically Valentino's most prized possession. And supposedly, this dog was so attached to Valentino that when Valentino died, the dog was in New York City, and 3,000 miles away in the California area, in 1926, Valentino collapsed and died. At the moment of his death, Kabar couldn't be consoled. He began to scream and howl and prance anxiously. And it was moments later that the house was called and they were told that Valentino had died, and the servants recognized that the dog knew at the moment of his death. The dog would, was kept in comfort until he passed away in 1929, and he was laid to rest as per Valentino's will in the pet cemetery in California, not so very far from where Valentino had passed away. People come to the cemetery and they talk about hearing the barking and the panting when you get close to Kabar's grave. And some people say as they walk by and they stop to read the placard that tells a little bit of a story, they will feel the dog licking their hand. So I thought it was a really interesting story. And this is a story from the Battle of Gettysburg. There are stories about dogs that died during war. People don't realize today how many dogs, cats, even horses and mules died in military conflicts and became ghosts. But this one I thought was particularly poignant. So there was a Confederate Brigadier General named William Barksdale who was wounded, needing a charge brought, and were brought to the Hummelbaugh House, which is in Gettysburg area. He died in the house, and his wife was notified, and she traveled to Gettysburg to bring back her husband's body. And she brought with her his favorite hunting dog that was always with him until he, you know, till the time of the war when he had to leave him home. When the dog was taken to Gettysburg, the dog immediately found the grave of his master, and he laid on the ground and began to howl. They tried to get the dog to stop, to get away. They were intent upon exhuming Barksdale's body to return his body home to his family cemetery. They took the body out, but the dog still refused to leave that spot. He refused to eat and he refused to drink. The Brigadier General's wife stayed with the dog for several days until the dog passed away. It wouldn't leave the spot where last his master had been buried. They claim that on the anniversary of Barksdale's death, you can go to that area and you can hear the dog still mourning, howling about the death of his beloved master. And I just thought that was a really interesting story.
All of these have been so far.
There are just so many of these stories. There's a story from St. Helens, Oregon, where, you know, the little town out there called Verona. And there's a story there about a thief who was caught on the banks of the Nahalem River. I hope I said that right. just outside of town. Again, it was a lynch mob story. They hung the gentleman. He was a thief, and he was the person who did it. And he had with him a dog, and that dog was shot because it was trying to attack people. So they were buried together on the bank of the river under an old oak tree, because they wouldn't bury him in the cemetery because they felt he wasn't a Christian man. On certain nights, people have claimed that they see the shadowy figure of a man and his dog walking along the banks of the river and along the woodlands right up above. People that camp there, this is the area is now a park called the Scopona Park. And people in the Scopona Park area with their campers have had no idea about this story, who, you know, didn't hear about it, have reported seeing this over the course of the time to the park rangers. And I just thought that that was an interesting story. And because of the a lot of times local stories people know and you can easily, you know, blow them off. But in the instance of this one, a lot of strangers who had no idea are the people who are reporting the story. Now we're going to get to a little darker story. So this is called The Demon Dog. And this story, yeah, this is called, there's an area there called the Valley of the Cross. And it's known as the Demon Dog of Val Crucis, or the Valley of the Cross. And the story goes that people see this dog here on Highway 194, just at the edge of town. There's a church cemetery there. There were two young men who were driving along that road one night. It was a beautiful, clear night. The moon was full, you know, and you could see very well. As their car came around the corner near the old churchyard, they saw a dog leap out from behind the graves onto the road in front of them. They swerved to avoid it and pulled off to the side of the road, wondering, you know, if he'd hit the dog or not, because the car had swerved around. It was a dog, and he did see it, but it wasn't an ordinary dog. He described it as a dog as tall and as wide as a full-grown man, covered in bristling black fur and with massive yellow teeth. The animal's eyes were glowing, not reflecting like a dog's eyes will, but burning with smoldering red light. The one man turned to the other and said, did you see that? And the other said, no, and neither did you. And the dog began to walk toward the parked car. The two friends, without speaking a word, grabbed hold of the car door handle on the one side and the steering wheel on the other and hit the gas and took off down the road. The dog chased them. They claimed that they were doing almost 80 miles an hour and the dog kept up with them. They could still see it, and it was even beginning to gain on them. Panicking and expecting that the dog was going to catch them, the driver gave one final push on the accelerator and the dog was just about to the car when the car leapt onto the bridge and crossed the water. At that point, just at the edge of the bridge, the dog stopped. They watched as the dog faded into the distance, and they realized that what they had seen was not a dog, but a demon. You see, demons can't cross water.
I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah. It's an old wives' tale.
Thinking that they couldn't leave its jurisdiction.
No, I mean, that would be there's these a lot of these old stories going way back into the 1200s. They will tell you that demons can't cross water.
Be a good reason to put a moat around your house.
It would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I thought that was a fascinating story, because apparently these two young men told the story in town, and others have seen. There's a few other instances when the dog was supposedly sighted. Now, this next one I find really interesting, and one of the reasons I find it interesting is because it's true. The people really existed. It's not an ambiguous two young guys or anything like this. We're going to talk about real people here. So this is the story of a spectral dog at a place called Hanging Hills in central Connecticut. The story's been around for about a little over 100 years, and it's really fascinating to me. So there is an area there called the Hubbard Park, and it has a thing called the Castle Craig which is a place where there are frequent sightings of this dog. So unlike a lot of the stories, this one is really specific. The story is about a short-haired black dog of moderate size, and there were only two signs by which it was ever known. The men who had seen it to bark, or had heard it have no sound. So you'd see its mouth going, you wouldn't see any sound, hear any sound, or you would hear it barking, but you wouldn't see it. And it left no footprints behind if it was seen running, whether it was the dust of summer or in the snow. So in February of the 1890s, a gentleman by the name of, his initials are FS, but we're gonna get down to their names later in the story, who's a Harvard-trained geologist, began exploring this lava-formed area called Hanging Hills in West Peak. He was joined by a friend of his named Herbert Marshall, who worked at the time for the U.S. Geological Survey. The night before they got there, the two gentlemen spent having dinner, and they were talking, and they knew the story of the black dog, that the dog had been seen there for quite a long time. So FS tells Marshall, he said, did you ever hear the story about the black dog? And he said, yeah, I've heard the story. Not only have I had the story, I've seen the dog. And he told him that he was in the region working 3 years earlier, and he had seen the dog twice before. And he recounts the local legend. He said, you know what they say, if you see the dog three times, it means that you're about to die. And they laughed about it. And the other fellow said, Frank said, the FS guy said, well, I've seen it once. And they were going to go there to do the work, and they just considered it a bit of folklore. And so they didn't think anything about it. So the next morning they set out, they found themselves kind of stuck. They thought it was going to be a mild day, and it was really bitterly cold. So they climbed up to the top of the peak, and as they were kind of debating on whether they should just turn back and go back home because it was just too cold, the dog stepped out. There's an article that was written a long time ago about this, and in the article it says, here high on the rocks above us stood a black dog like the one I had seen 3 years before. We saw his breath rising, steam from his jaws, but not a sound came from the biting air. Once and only once, he gazed down upon us with gleaming eyes, and then he bounded back out of sight. At that instant, the rock outcropping Marshall stood on gave way, and he fell to his death. Interestingly enough, the story was written by a gentleman by the name of W.H.C. Pynchon, grandfather of Thomas Pynchon, who was a fiction writer. And he wrote it for the Connecticut Quarterly. In a postscript, F.S. returned, this was his second time seeing the dog now, remember, returned to the same area where his friend died as a memorial. He wanted to put something there to remember his friend. And while he was there, he fell to his death as well. So the question is, did he see the dog for the third time?
Yeah, if I was a betting man, I would say probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a total of 6 people have died on that spot, and several of them had confided to family and friends they had seen the dog on 2 previous occasions. So that's 6, possibly 6, up to 6 different people who had seen the dog and not survived to tell the tale at the end. I found this interesting story that I wanted to share. And now I wanted to share it not because just it's an interesting story, but because it seems to almost have generated a whole bunch of other such stories. So this is a story about written by a young woman who talks about when she was a little girl. She was 7 years old. Her sisters were 5 and 4. And they shared a bedroom in their house, and they were very, very attached to each other because they were military kids. So they moved every couple years. So really and truly, the only person that they had as a dear friend was each other. So one night they're sleeping in their bedroom, and the little girl woke up, one of the younger children woke up, and she was screaming and ran down the hall saying, you need to save me, you need to save me, there's a big white dog in my room. So the dad gets up and he goes to the children's room, and of course there's nothing there. So he questions the other two girls who woke up because of their sister's fussing. And they said, there was a white dog in the room, Daddy. We saw it, a big white dog with shining red eyes. It stood in the corner of the bedroom and it watched us. They were absolutely terrified. So he gathered the girls up and he said, okay, there's just something going on. He was a little superstitious, but he also didn't want to take a chance. So he gathered the kids up. He took them to the living room and they stayed in the living room. She said we were worried because we thought this was a manifestation of something evil. We were wondering if anybody else had similar experiences, and they were writing in a forum on this. The interesting thing is there's got to be 30. Now, I read a lot of these forum things, and you'll get two or three people who go, oh, hey, that happened to me, you know? But 30 or 40 people out of about 50 or 60 replies? So I'd like to read one of them. This one says, when I was a kid, I had a similar experience. I was about 7. I'd been worrying about my parents because I used to see things like, you know, spiders and snakes and crap, and I would see things behind the TV or the couches that looked real to me. I would call my mom to look at them, and there would never be anything there. For this reason, they had me sleeping in their bed with them. So they were sleeping, and I was still up staring at the doorway when a white wolf with red eyes stepped around the doorway and looked directly at me. I was scared to death and covered my head with the blankets, thinking to myself and imagining, it's not there, it's not there, it's not there. I can just see a 7-year-old child doing that, just to tell themselves that. The child said, as I had the covers over my head, I felt the wolf climb onto the bed and atop the covers. I can still see its nails poking through the covers as it walked right over. And then there was nothing. I waited under the covers for what felt like hours, but was probably only minutes. And then I poked my head out. Nothing was there, and that was it. I will never forget the nails that poked through the covers, and I was so scared. I never told a soul about that until now. I don't remember if there was a birth or anything significant or a death that happened at the time. I don't know what made me look this up now, maybe because I was supposed to find this out. And then literally there's at least 40 posts. I didn't highlight all 40, of course, but I highlighted about 7 or 8, and they're very, very close. And I just thought it was fascinating that so many people have had this experience, most of them as children. And I thought that was just a really interesting story. So here's another white dog story. This one was interesting because it left physical effects. So this is a story of a child who claimed that they got off the school bus at their grandma's house, and their grandma lived up on a hill, so you had to walk the long driveway. And as she was walking up the driveway, she heard a whimpering sound, this little girl. And so she's looking to see what it was, and then as she's walking along, she's still kind of looking to see what it was, and she heard a dog barking, and a huge dog came leaping out at her. The dog had streaks of dirt and blood on it, but she said, I could tell that it was white to begin with. It growled and it barked at me, but what I remember were those dark pitch black eyes that almost stared through you. I was scared to my wits. The dog jumped on me and tackled me in the grass. The dog bit my leg just enough to make it bleed, and I closed my eyes. I couldn't fight that dog. When I opened them again, the dog was gone, and my grandma and my cousins were all around me. I told my grandma what had happened, and she didn't believe me, but I had the bite that on my leg, and she said it had to be a neighbor's dog. Well, that got me thinking. So a couple weeks later, when my bite had scabbed over, I began to talk to one of the neighbors. He told me that he knew the people that used to live in that house. And then what he said really gave me a scare. He said there was an old lady who lived in the house, and she had this great big old white dog that was there with her all the time. And one day the dog was running down the driveway and it got hit by a car. It was in a terrible state. It was all covered in dirt and blood, and the poor old lady couldn't stand what had happened. He said, I think she might have moved out because of it. And all I could wonder was if that was the dog that attacked me. because she thought the old lady still lived there. And I thought that was fascinating because this actually went into the physical realm where it literally bit her and this child had a bite on her leg. You know, what are the odds of that?
I've never calculated them.
I think they'd be pretty steep, yeah. You know, and I have to tell you, one of these days I'd like to do a podcast on dreams that reach out into reality, because there are so many experiences, people who have, for example, I know somebody who was a child was dreaming he was fighting in the briar bush. This is one of my children, my oldest. He was about 13 years old. And he was having a nightmare, and he was all wrapped up in these, like, briar bushes. And he was fighting, and he was getting, they were wrapping around him, and they were jagging him, and he was scared. And he screamed, and he woke up. This is true as could be. I heard him scream. I got out of bed and went over to see what was wrong. And he said, I was all caught up in them briar bushes. I was running from that thing. And I said, what thing? And he said, I don't know, Mom, but it was this horrible thing behind me, and I was running, and I got stuck in the briar bushes. And he said, my legs are all scratched up. And I said, okay, honey, it's fine. Calm down. I know it feels real. We've all had those nightmares that we come up out of, and they feel just way too real for us, you know? But he pulled the blankets off and the sheet, and it was white sheets, and there were bloody strips on the sheets, and his legs were scratched. I don't know how that happened, but he looked like he'd been in the briars. So I find those, and I know other such stories. So I would like sometime would like to, if I can gather enough of them, and if some of our listeners have stories of something like that, we would love to hear them, because that's something I would like to work on. But I would love to share some of their stories as well. So
yeah, they can either reply or, you know, send something to this podcast on our Facebook post, email, whatever.
Yeah. So I don't know if many people know the name Christopher Knight today, but Christopher Knight was Peter Brady in the old sitcom The Brady Bunch. Most people knew who he was. Mm-hmm. So according to him, while he was working on The Brady Bunch, they were staying in this creepy old bed and breakfast, and they did a series of episodes where they were traveling. They did one, I think it was called Dry Gulch, where they found this guy in a old abandoned ghost town and different stuff. So it was during the filming of this episode that they were staying this in what he calls the creepy old bed and breakfast. And they stayed up late telling ghost stories the night before. So he woke up in the middle of the night to find two hunting dogs sitting on the foot of his bed staring at him. And he saw a little girl gazing at him from the doorway. He said neither the dogs nor the little girl made a single sound, and after a few moments, they faded away. So the next morning, he told the owner of the place and, you know, his adults that that story, and he said, I don't know if it was a dream or a vision or what it was, but boy, it sure did feel real. And the owner of the bed and breakfast said to him, why don't you guys follow me? I have something I want to show you. And there were two andirons at the fireplace, which were in the shape of dogs. And these dogs were to guard the old the house from fire. But here's the thing. The decorations were inspired by the two real dogs who had lived in the house at one time. And the B&B owner thought that the little girl might have been the daughter that died there. That was the child of the owner who had had the dogs and had the andirons, you know, made in their memory. I thought that was interesting. I mean, what are the, you know, you look at it and you think, wow, what an interesting story to have fallen into.
Well, that's not the first celebrity, though, who's had stories.
Oh, no, not at all. There are tons and tons of them. Actually, there's a entire series called Celebrity Ghost Stories. I've watched a lot of them over the years. I like them in particular. I'm thinking of, there's one, I wish I could remember the gentleman's name so I could tell the story, but he took his son to Russia, and he was doing a gig over there doing something, and they were staying in this old hotel, a lot of atmosphere, And he and his son kept having this experience of seeing this young woman very frightened. She would run down the hall and then disappear right before their door. And finally, eventually, they were talking to the owners of the hotel, and they said, well, you do know what this hotel used to be used for. Of course, they had no clue. They were from America. They didn't know. And when the Soviets were executing dissidents, they were arresting them, and it was pressed into service as a kind of prison. And most of the people who had been there at that time had been executed either in the building or around it. And he said there was just a very dark feeling. And, you know, he literally told his son, he's like, we're packing up, we're moving someplace else. This is too much, just too much. I don't want to be in a place where this much evil happened. But there are hundreds. Do you remember Britt Summer? She was a really famous model in the 60s. And remember her?
Swedish, right?
Yes, Swedish model. Mm-hmm. And she used to tell the story of the ghosts in the house that she lived in. She saw them quite often. And she told it during an interview, she told the stories, and they were kind of joshing. You know, back in the 60s, you couldn't tell people you saw ghosts. But she was dead on earnest. And she said, oh, no, I know who these people are. You know, they were the people that lived in this house about 40 years ago. And I know all about them, and I see them quite a lot. They even rearrange the chairs in my dining room sometimes, because apparently they don't like where I have them.
Well, that holds true with many different haunting stories where the ghosts just don't like changes. You know, they want things the way they left them.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that happens quite frequently. In fact, that's one of the reasons why they say if you're remodeling a house, you'll have an increase in activity if you have a house that's already haunted, because they're either curious or they're a little frustrated about the fact you're making renovations and changes to their home. So, you know, they'll show themselves. But she was telling, and one of the stories in her house was of a little black Yorkie that she would see going through the house. And she saw it quite frequently. In fact, her dog, she had Yorkies herself, and she said her dogs would often like key on it and respond to it. And on a couple occasions, she saw her dogs go up and sniff it, and then the dog would just disappear. So it was, you know, it was really, there's so many of those stories that are out there. So on doing a thing on dogs, we're going to talk about a few of the black dogs. Like I said, there are some very evil associations with black dogs. And one of the dogs that is most famous is the black dog of Newgate Prison in London. So from 1188 to 1902, that's a long time. Excuse me. Newgate Prison was notorious. It had cells in the gatehouse in the city walls. And various times it had been burnt down, they've been demolished, rebuilt, reformed, etc. And it was really badly lit. It was terrible ventilation, overcrowded, filthy, disease-ridden. It was a horrible place. Now the warders, or you know, what we would call prison guards today, abused the inmates terribly. They beat confessions out of them and just tortured them, chained them to walls, let people starve to death. It was, I can't even begin to tell you how horrendous this place was. It was a living nightmare. Newgate had a bar, and the prisoners who were there that could afford it, well-to-do, could get drunk, and so could the guards. In fact, a lot of times the guards that were on night shift would sit and talk all night and get drunk, so that they could pass the time until they could stagger down the hallway and leave the keys with the head of the guard, and then they would go to their quarters and go to bed. You literally lived in this mess. I can't imagine. Well, anyhow, there is a story that came from there. During the reign of Henry III, which would have been 1216 to 1272, I remember reading that. That's impressive, because I'm not a number person.
That's quite the memory, yeah.
But I think this is a good story. Was attached. They stuck with me. So anyhow, he was actually arrested for sorcery. And after this, after he was sent there, he he was killed and devoured, if you will. And it's after all of this that the story comes into play. So there were stories from the prison guards of a large black dog with chain wrapped around its neck and body. The dog was sighted for centuries off and on. And in the 1500s, the story takes a really bizarre turn. There's an area in the prison that was called the Dead Man's Walk. And it was obviously the last area where people walk through for executions. But it was also an area where every night the prison guards, when you went changed shifts, you had to walk down this area to the head of the guards' chambers. And you would give him the keys and kind of a report. The new guy would come down, he would get the keys, hear the report, and then they would go out and do their thing. So there was this great big room before you get to the prison, to that walkway, where the guards would come for like to drink or to have something to eat and to just sort of sit there and talk together so they didn't fall asleep. And then they'd go do their rounds and come back and go do their rounds and come back and till the end of the night. According to them, suddenly this dog that had been seen throughout the prison off and on began coming nightly to that large room. And he would come in, chain jangling around his neck and body, and without a sound, go and lay down. This thing was as big as a calf. And it would lay down in front of the fireplace, take up its customary spot. At first, people were terrified of it, but this went on for months and months and months. And eventually, the prison guards kind of had the, we're just going to pretend it's not their attitude, and just left it to its devices. But because every night at about 4 o'clock in the morning, the dog would rise and go down that walkway, Dead Men's Walk, and then disappear at the end of the hall where the doorway was for the warden. Nobody wanted to go down there by themselves to turn the keys over anymore. So they would walk down in groups of two. It was kind of agreed among them. They'd walk down in groups of two. And they did this for quite a long while, for almost a year. And one night there was a dude who got, and was one of the prison guards, and he got really, I mean, he got rip-roaring drunk. And he was like, "You think I'm afraid of the dog over there? Neither a live nor a dead dog would scare me." He said, "In fact, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to go down the Dead Man's Walk tonight and deliver them keys alone." Well, it wasn't even his night to deliver the keys, but the guy who was supposed to do it, he was real thrilled with that news. Because it was very unnerving to go down through there, you know, and deliver the keys and know that that dog could be down there somewhere. So the guy picked up the keys and with all his bravado, trotted them right on down. And it was only a few seconds later they heard the jingling of the chain. They heard barking and growling. They heard the screams of the man. And there wasn't one among them that was willing to go out and take a look. So a few seconds go by and this guy comes bursting in, his eyes huge. He's all ripped up and he's shaking and he's like, "It was the dog, it was the dog." And he collapsed to the floor. He was definitely attacked by a dog. I mean, that's what it looked like. He was taken to his chambers where he died a couple days later of his injuries, most likely, although fear, I'm sure, had something to do with it. And they say that after that, the dog never returned. He was seen elsewhere, but he never walked down the Dead Man's Walk. At least none of the guards ever saw him again.
That's curious, almost like it was waiting for that, you know, until it happened. And then, okay, on to the next. Right?
Yep. But I thought it was a fascinating story because, like, there was a lot of documentation of the fact that the guards reported seeing it all the time. And before we leave all the black dogs, black dogs are just an ominous feature of British and Scottish and Irish folklore. There is the Bargeist, or the Bargeist, which is from Yorkshire, north of England. And he is a dog that is seen laying on the threshold of your home. And if you see him, and you'll know him, he's a large dog with glowing eyes, then he's there to let you know that you're going to die soon. And if you hear the dogs, all your dogs in the neighborhood going crazy, and you hear them barking like mad, and then this one dog takes up the lament louder than the rest and longer than the rest, and all the other dogs fall silent, that is the Bargeist coming to the neighborhood, and the dogs are wailing mournfully because they know that soon a funeral procession will go through, and one of the leading figures of the neighborhood will be dead. There are so many stories of the Bargeist that I could tell you like for 2 or 3 hours. There is a story of one in a place called Whitby. Whitby is a coastal town. Actually, the story of Dracula takes place in Whitby. It is said that this dog walks at night, a huge, enormous beast, and he roams the moors, that sometimes he would appear with a headless man or a headless woman and a flash of flame. And he's also known as the bear ghost, because others will say that they see him as the Bargeist or a bear ghost. And it is believed that he is a harbinger of doom. But like so many of the stories of that time, he can't cross water. So if you can make it to the other side of the bridge that leads from town, you will make it to safety. Of course, most people are familiar with Old Shuck, a terrifying demonic phantom of a black dog that haunts Suffolk, Norfolk, and Essex. He attacks people walking along the roads. They call them wayfarers, and he foreshadows a death. The person who glimpses the dog knows that they or someone close to them are about to die. The word shuck is derived from the word for the devil or fiend, and so the meaning means terrifying fiend. And the dog, when he's first seen, is you'll know who he is. He's large red eyes and what have you. First written account of him being seen on any of the roads in that region is in 1850. Up till then, there were no legends of it. And then somebody saw one. And then after that, they were seen, he or it, they were seen stalking many of the local lesser known roads. And there's just so many of these. I'm just kind of going down through. There's one called the Moody Doo, which is a sinister black dog that haunts the Peel Castle. The dog walked the corridors, and this story is really fascinating. So the gentleman who owned Peel Castle, he was a terrible man. He was a very rich man, but he was a very mean, hateful person. And he used to get rip-roaring drunk, and his favorite thing to do was to get drunk, and then he'd order the hounds out, and they'd go hunting all night in this mad rage of alcohol. One night, he was out hunting, and this dog came loping up out of nowhere with his huge eyes and what have you, and crossed his path. No one else saw it but him. And he was screaming about this dog. And of course, within the next day or so, he was dead. So it was a demon dog to be a harbinger. But they said he used to beat his dogs mercilessly if they couldn't do what they were supposed to do, if they couldn't rise up any game, fox or whatever he was hunting that night. And sometimes he would have them killed. So was it the dog's revenge? There's an equally interesting story here in Pennsylvania, which is written about, I believe, in Haunted Pennsylvania, the original book, the green one. And it's about a guy who was a landowner, also a very nasty man. And he was a hunter, and he was a braggart. And he had all these rich people come in for some sort of land deal with him. He made a big show out of how his hunting dogs were the best pack in the entire state. And one of the guys called his bluff and said, well, then let's go hunting tonight. So he ordered the dogs readied, and he took them out hunting. He was about 2/3 drunk, and they took the dogs out, and the dogs didn't do well. They didn't find whatever they were supposed to find. They couldn't scare up any game. He was furious, and he had one of those big forges that they had from smelting, and he ordered the dogs thrown in there alive and burned, and nobody could stop him, nobody. Not the rich men from Philadelphia who had come, nobody, and he burned them alive. And they said that for the rest of his life at night, around that castle, the house he lived in, you could hear the dogs howling and baying in pain. And they haunted him so badly they drove him mad. And then he died. And then he joined the haunting.
Don't be nasty to your dogs.
Don't be nasty to any animal. But with that, I'm going to leave it for this evening. There are literally thousands of these stories. If you guys like them, if you want to hear some more, if you want to hear other stories of animals that haunt, we know of camels and horses and donkeys and cats and you name it, that haunt. I don't believe that our animals leave us. I've told the story of a little yellow cat that haunted. You've told stories about your, you know, about your cat.
Several, yeah.
Yeah. I believe that what we do as, you know, I don't even say owners, as the friends of these animals. I have to tell you, I think my cats kind of own me. They do. They get me up at 4 o'clock in the morning to feed them chicken and chicken broth. And then I change their cat litter and I make sure they have everything they want. So I'm pretty sure they're the smart ones and I'm their servant. So, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Because like when Loki comes and lays on me, or Ponce, who's 20, climbs up on my chest and just decides to purr for a couple minutes, I'm more than paid back for any inconvenience. So with that,
that extends your life. Yeah.
It does. It actually does. There's fascinating research on the fact that, you know, animals can extend your life just by you having them there. They lower your blood pressure. They keep you calm. They change your mental health. And with that said, for those of you who are lovers of animals, I have a dear friend who's in a life and death fight right now for his dog. And I won't say his name, but he's a veteran. This dog has been part of his salvation since coming home from the war 20 years, 30 years ago. And if you believe in prayer, please say a prayer for him and for his dog. With that, I'll say good evening. I'm done.
You get the last word.
Oh, I
always. I mean, that's my rule. You know, you get the last word.
I don't care one way or the other.